Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go. It's Tuesday, and it's nap time again. This is the show that's sweeping the country and the world. I am so blessed to do it. It's the Gross Misconduct Podcast, hosted by my brother, a mentor and a friend to me, Kip Gross. He's out there in Arizona. Yours truly, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles, 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss it, tell all your friends, catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So as I lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. Kip, first of all, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? And I got the best of you, at least on the Steeler-Raider game on Sunday.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you did. My Raiders didn't play too well on offense by any means, but we're going to try to get this thing worked out with a couple of the receivers somewhere down the line. I'm doing really good. I'm out here in Fountain Hills again in Arizona, and it's 102 today. But the good news is it's going to start cooling down this next week and get down in the 80s. So it's going to be that perfect weather here for about 9 straight months. So anybody that wants to come do some vacation or whatever, come out to Fountain Hills, Scottsdale, Phoenix area, because it's going to be nice. BeAGamer@gmail.com is my email address, and KipGross.com is the website. Come see me, and let's have some fun today, Mark.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the old guys rule. We keep getting better with age, man. Another month and a half, I'll be 62, and I feel like 30. And look at you. You're looking great yourself, man. We age great as we get older, men. Who says men lose their, shape and everything? Not all of us, but a couple of us guys doing this show, we're in great shape. Hey, let's start out with football. I know you weren't on the wagon train. I was, and I said to myself, God, if they can beat Oregon, and I don't know about USC, and you said, no, I'm going to pull the brakes on that. Well, Deion Sanders hit a roadblock in Eugene. They got throttled like 41-3, and now they get USC in their backyard. That's the only benefit. But, man, oh, man, what happened to the Buffs in Eugene?
Well, they ran into the old what I'd like to say, the humble pie this week. The Colorado team, it's so far away from being good, and it was just too easy to see from the very first game because they were playing TCU, and TCU, obviously, they were in the championship game last year, but they lost 80% of their starters, and people don't know this either. Six of those starters last year went to the NFL off of TCU, And the quarterback was a Heisman candidate at the end, so that team wasn't even close to being the same. They lost so many people. So for Colorado to win and beat them, I don't think it was that big of an upset whatsoever. And then to beat my Nebraska Cornhuskers, my Huskers were in the game one score down in the fourth quarter, and then Colorado State, who shouldn't even be on a map anywhere, should have won the game had they just had some clock management with about 3 or 4 minutes left. So and then they got to run into USC this week. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. It's going to get even uglier. So some of these teams out there, guys, don't go by what the media is telling you of what's saying. Just take a look at them, watch them, and see what kind of speed they have and see what kind of blockers they have, linemen, and it tells you a whole bunch of what's going on. Nebraska plays the Michigan Wolverines this week, and it could get ugly for my Huskers, but – in my defense, we've got a decent defense, so that might keep us in the game. We'll have to see.
Yeah, and the other thing is, Dalen from Chelmsford, DeMass, chopping in at the bit here. He's a regular listener. Dalen, welcome to the show. We're so blessed to each and have you. He said, what's the deal with these Pac-12 games late at night? Nobody's staying up in the East Coast to watch these things end at like 1:30, 2 in the morning, unless you're at a bar. Yeah, I don't understand these games. USC had a game last year. I think it ended like 11:30 at night out of the Coliseum. By the time you get out of there and get home, it's like 2 in the morning. That's crazy.
Yeah, I sometimes wonder about it myself, why they do it, but obviously it's for money. They're doing it to get as best viewership as they can on the West Coast. And I feel sorry for the East Coast. I used to live in Florida at one time, and it was tough. I mean, Monday night football, all those games in college on Saturday night, it was tough. I mean, you had to stay up past midnight if you're going to watch all the games. I do see now that Monday night football you know, they're going with two games, and I'm pretty sure they're doing the two games just so the East Coast can see some football on Monday night prior to
yeah.
it. It's an hour earlier at least, which does help. So,
yep.
But you know what? I feel for these guys out on the East Coast. I really do. If you're a football fan, you better have a late alarm the next day because you're not gonna see too much football otherwise.
Exactly. Not only that, living on the East Coast, you don't even get the West Coast scores in the paper in the next day. I mean, it's really a rarity. I mean, you gotta wait to catch it on you know, the internet or something like that if you don't stay up and watch these games. That's absolutely nuts in more ways than one. Give me a sure shot this week. Give me a don't be surprised, and then we'll get into our topic. This week's topic's a good one, winning franchises and wildlings. So the Mitch Williams are going to come to the forefront in this show today, along with your ex-teammates. Who's your sure shot this week? And don't be surprised. Could it, don't be surprised on your list be Nebraska stunning Michigan?
No. I don't see Nebraska stunning anybody this week at all. I can't see it happening. You know, it's one of those things where college football is so usually one-sided early in the season, and then you get into you play your divisions and all of that, and so then you get into some rivalries and that comes to play. But if I had to give you a sure thing this week, I would take Michigan over Nebraska. There's no question about it. Nebraska right now is struggling with a quarterback position. He's, you know, we're running the run option, and he hasn't optioned the ball one time yet as a quarterback. So it's. I don't think it's going to be that. I think it's going to be a decently low scoring game. I do, but I would take Michigan in a heartbeat over Nebraska. And it's really hard for me to say, being a Nebraska Cornhusker season ticket holder since 1984 and
wow.
diehard fan of them. But you know what? Sometimes you got to do it with the head instead of the heart. And so Michigan, I'd take them all day long this week. And I'd also take USC in a second over Colorado. And I'd give those 21 points all day long.
Yeah.
Not a question
yeah,
about it. Colorado's going to run into some bad things coming up soon.
Yeah, that's going to be especially USC. They started out slow against Arizona State and then turned it on to blow them out of the water. I'll give you a don't be not really surprised, but it's going to be a good game. Penn State, Northwestern. Northwestern's 2-2. Penn State 4-0. I love Penn State this year. I like their running attack, and they're going to be tough. If they can knock out the Ohio States and Michigans this year, they're going to be dangerous. So I like Penn State. I'll give you my don't be surprised, and you might think I'm crazy, Washington, the Skins, going into Philadelphia and beating the Eagles. I know they got pounded by Buffalo at home, like 37-3, but I'm going to hang on them. I think they can pull a stunner in Philly. Philly, a short week, playing Tampa last night, and then coming home. So I'm gonna go with Washington in that one. But, boy, some good games to talk about, and it'll be good when, hockey and everything start to roll and the playoffs. But let's get into the winning franchises. And I know you got one you want to throw at, and I'll throw one. But number one winning franchise growing up, all time, whatever, throw one out there and dissect it a little.
You know what? Obviously, you got to go with the Yankees because they've won so many damn titles over the years. But you know what? So many people hear about that, and they think Yankees all the time. But, you know, the Miami Marlins, when they get to the postseason,
yeah.
they win. They've just always won. And so they've had one of the least amounts of times to the postseason, but they've also won so many times when they've been there, at least record-wise, and with the championships. Dodgers, obviously, have done really well over the years. St. Louis Cardinals, so well over the years. It just seems to be a reoccurring theme all the time with baseball, though, as far as who gets there, who wins, and gets the postseason. And I'll go right back to it. Money has a ton to do with it because, you know, a lot of these franchises now, they buy their players and they buy their teams. I mean, that's what the Miami Marlins did to win their championships, and they had fire sale right afterwards. But at least they won and the fans were there and they did it. So You know, there's a lot of good franchises out there over the years. I mean, you got the Red Sox who only won one, you know, after, you know, the curse of the Bambino.
Yeah.
But they did. And by the way, I'm going to go back to the Baltimore Orioles real quick and just say rest in peace, Brooks Robinson, who passed away today. 82 years old. And I got a chance to play golf with him a few years back. And one of my old roommates' dad actually played on his high school team. And his dad told me that, I don't know if it's true, but he told me that every player on his high school team, Brooks Robinson's high school team, played professional baseball eventually. So Brooks comes from, he came from good stock, and they probably one of, if not the best third baseman ever. But yeah, winning franchises, guys, there's a lot of them out there. But, you know, Yankee just has to be up there right away. It has to be up there just to how many they've won over the years.
Oh, yeah. The one I'm going to throw is the one in your backyard. You got to play with them. The 1990 Reds, they were just, I mean, they just, what the back end of that bullpen and everything, the Nasty Boys. Yeah, you can throw the 76 Reds. I haven't seen a better offensive team than that. You know, and people could tell me about the Yankees of the 50s and all this, but the 70s were just loaded with teams. And, you know, you look at the Pirates back in the heyday, you're right, the Dodgers with that infield of 8 years running with Garvey, Lopes, Say, and Russell. You know, they were just a mainstay. You can even throw the Toronto Blue Jays. I mean, you know, in the day, they were just so consistent, you know, winning just – just a winning franchise. The Detroit Tigers, the 35-5, '84 team, was just unbelievable. So when you look at somebody, and you're right, the St. Louis Cardinals, to me, they're a quiet dynasty. You know, everybody talks about all these other teams and everything. The Cardinals just win consistent. And they're going to finish in last this year, but when was the last time you seen a Cardinal team sitting in the cellar of a division? It's a rarity. Even in the 70s, you didn't even see it when it was the Pirates and the Phillies and Expos battling it out. The Cardinals seemed to always be in the mix. But, yeah, the Cardinals, quiet dynasty, and you're right. But the one that sticks out to me, your red team of 1990, they were just something special with Myers and Dibble and Charlton. Oh, my gosh. They would just come at you with guns blazing.
Yeah, if a starter could get through six innings and was ahead, you pretty much won the game because, you know, it was Dibble, Charlton, and then Myers coming in to clean it up at the end for three straight innings. And so it was – I really do believe – I said this before – I do believe that Lou Piniella and the Reds and us in 1990 actually set the precedent for how they're doing the bullpen today and letting guys go one inning and just dominating at the end. And, you know, it was so much fun watching these guys pitch coming out of the bullpen because they were all different. All three were so much different. Dibbs would come in, and he'd first couple pitches, he'd throw them to the backstop just to get into the hitter's heads to say, oh, look at me, I'm wild. But he would do it. He had no problem doing it. And then Norm coming in, being left-handed, who, by the way, had the best stuff of all three of those guys, not even to question the stuff he had compared to Myers and Dibble. But he'd come in and he would just control the game. He was the ultimate gamer as a baseball player and a pitcher. And then you had Myers who came in. He told you every pitch he was going to throw. I'm going to throw a fastball low and away, every pitch, hit it. If you want to hit it, go ahead, but I'm going to paint that black out there 95 miles an hour. And if you can hit it the other way, hit it the other way out of the ballpark. Other than that, that's what I'm going to do. And Dibbs, you know, I'm going to go back to Dibbs for a second. Everybody thought he threw so hard, and he did. I mean, I watched him numerous times on the old guns when it crossed the plate for the speed. He threw 103 miles an hour numerous times that I watched. But I'll tell you guys, it wasn't his fastball. His fastball got hit. His fastball got rocked quite a few times. His slider was just unbelievably good. I mean, he threw his slider over and over and over again. I mean, he was Jose Rio out of the bullpen because Jose, he used to throw slider too, and he ended up having a bad arm because of it. But when you can throw a devastating slider for a strike and on a corner the way he did with 103 miles per hour.
Oh my God!
It was unhittable at times, just unhittable. And you know, I played with Billy Wagner for a season too.
Yeah.
And I watched him throw 103 miles an hour from the left side and coming out of his shoulder, And it just blows me away and blew me away to this day is how hard these guys actually threw the ball. And, you know, today they got guys throwing 100 on the new guns, which gets it out of the hand. So anybody that thinks that guys today throw harder than they did back in the day, it's not true. They threw just as hard, if not harder, back in the day. So, but yeah.
Well, not only that.
It was a great year to win. It was.
Yeah. And not only that, Kip, I mean, when you look at it, the guys that threw back then 100 miles an hour were throwing it consistently. You know, look at Ohtani. I mean, everybody was thinking this guy's the best they've ever seen. I don't want to take anything away from him. But you know what? His arm's done. I mean, he burned out his arm now, and even if he gets it back, I mean, you know, I think the problem is it's happening at an early age with these guys, and they just don't have the consistency those guys of old had where – they threw the 200 innings. We've talked about that before. Lance from Pensacola, Florida, coming in and says, guys, you're forgetting a couple teams here, winning franchises, the Kansas City Royals, George Brett, Hal McRae in the days, Willie Wilson, and also the Atlanta Braves. Yeah, you're absolutely right. The Royals and the Braves got to be – there's a lot of other teams. We could throw the Astros in there too, Lance. Kip, any comment on his comment about the Royals and – the Braves, and we'll throw the Astros, and we can throw the Expos in there.
Yeah, I wasn't done with my winning franchise yet. I was going to say the Royals, and I was going to say the Braves also. You know, the Royals back in the day when George Brett and all those guys were around, you know, that was my team growing up because, I mean, I lived in western Nebraska, and Kansas City was pretty close, so I absolutely idolized George Brett. It was a daily thing with me. Then you go to the Braves, and – they remind me of the St. Louis Cardinals. Every year they seem to put something back together again. You know, they might have had some bad years back in the day, but overall, the Atlanta Braves now are the epitome. Or they're just so much better than everybody from all the way from the minor leagues all the way up to the top of the front office because they're building franchises instead of just going out and buying guys. You know, they let Freddie Freeman go. It wasn't even a problem. And everybody said, oh, geez, you know, they're going to fall apart with Freddie Freeman gone. Well, obviously the other guy took over and did just as well, if not better. So it just, you got to believe in who you have and you got to believe in letting guys go. And that's why, you know, a franchise like the Angels, just in my opinion, haven't been that good over the years is because they held on to their superstar Mike Trout when they needed to get other players in there. You can't win the game of baseball with one guy. You can't do it. I mean, it's so easy to pitch around one guy during the whole game, and let him do his thing when there's nobody on base and you're winning. Who cares what he does? But you know, Atlanta Braves. There's no question about it. We talked about the Orioles. I really liked the Kansas City Royals back in the day. But you're right about the old Cincinnati Reds when Morgan and Pete Rose and those guys are around. I mean, you could literally almost say that entire lineup was Hall of Famers. That's how good that team was. And to look at that and go back over, it's like, wow, wouldn't that just been something to be able to play for a team like that? Because you just knew every day you had a great chance to win the game.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it on those fronts. And you brought up the Royals and everything. And, you know, when you look at the swinging A's, the A's with the three titles in the 70s and just what Tony La Russa brought to those guys and McGuire and everything. Hey, we're down to about 12 minutes. Boy, this show goes by quick. And next week on the show, listeners, should be a dandy. Curveballs and cheaters. So we keep coming up with the good ones each and every week. And then we'll recap the games of college and the NFL with you as we start to really open up this show. When you look at the Wildlings, and you played with quite a few of them, Kip, and you've probably seen the eccentrics, idiosyncrasies of these guys and everything. But I'm going to throw – we always talked about Al Raboski and how crazy he was. Man, oh, man, I'm gonna throw Kent Tekulve out there that if he wasn't playing baseball, he would look like a surgeon in a doctor's office.
Kent Tekulve, you know what? You're right about that. He, you know, you had the little glass thing going, looks like a little, almost like a little Greg Maddux off the field. And, you know, the wild thing, you know, first of all, you got to, first you got to go with the Rob Dibbles of the world because, you know, he wasn't wild. He really wasn't wild. He could throw the ball where he wanted to, but he appeared to be wild because he would intimidate the hitters doing stuff by throwing balls to the backstop when he came in relief. And those things were really kind of funny. And then you got to go with Mitch Williams, you know, his nickname was Wild Thing, and he was wild. He was definitely wild, but unfortunately for him, he threw a ball that lost a World Series for him, Joe Carter in the World Series.
Oh,
of Toronto.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just, you know, people think that sometimes these wild guys, whatever, can't pitch and they shouldn't pitch, especially closing the game. But when you can pitch and throw balls that come out of your hand and the hitters don't see it coming out of the hand very well, it's just hard to hit them. And you have that doubt in the back of your mind that you might get hit. And so these guys, they call it effectively wild, and it just works. I'm going to go with one other guy here that most guys have no idea who he is, and he never pitched in the big league. His name was Steve Dalkowski. And back in the day, he threw so hard. Actually, a buddy of mine's dad caught him when he was an A-ball, and he said he was unbelievably threw the ball harder than anybody ever. So he threw like in 110 miles an hour back then on the old guns. That's how hard this guy threw. But he just couldn't throw strikes. He'd have like, 100 innings, he'd have 185 strikeouts, 200 strikeouts, but he'd also have that many walks in the season too, or during the season. So Steve Dalkowski had really thick glasses. And if you ever played the game of baseball to a certain level, you're going to see guys that are wild and on and off the field. We can get to that point too here in a little bit. But the whole thing with pitching is you got to be effective. And that's why I've always said it's okay to be effectively wild, because that hitter's going to look out a little bit, and then he's not going to dig in as much. He's not going to take as big of a hack. So I like this subject.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? I'm going to throw two of them at you with about 8 minutes in change left. And I kind of grew up with these guys. I've interviewed one of them. The other one I haven't got yet. And I talked to him a few months ago. Was Raleigh Fingers. And Raleigh Fingers, not so much the wild thing, just the mustache, the whole look. I remember with the A's, with the Brewers, with the Padres. Boy, Raleigh Fingers was something else. And, man, oh, man, I just love his whole makeup. He had the handlebar mustache going. And the other one, if Ron Say was not wearing a batting helmet that day, Goose Gossage probably would have killed him with that pitch. But you talk about guy throwing speed. Goose Gossage, and I remember in the day when Gossage and Terry Forster were with the Pirates, and then the next year free agency came and they were both out of there. One went to the Yankees and one went, I guess, to the Dodgers. But, man, oh, man, Goose Gossage was another one, Kip. So I'm going to throw those two, and you can come back with two more if you want, and we can go back and forth till we end this show. But I'm going to hang with Raleigh Fingers and Goose Gossage. What do you got? What's
well,
your cards look like?
I absolutely loved watching Goose Gossage pitch. He was the epitome of the reliever coming in back in the day. You know, he didn't come in for one inning. He came in for three innings. And, you know, if everybody really remembers when he was with the Yankees and he was pitching against George Brett at Yankee Stadium, George Brett takes him deep. It was the Pine Tar game. And it was fun to watch. Like I said, I was an idol of – George Brett was an idol of mine. And I actually got to meet Goose Gossage back in, I think it was 2001. I met him in the clubhouse. He come over and we said hi and we shook hands. And he's one of those guys. He's a straight shooter, just like he was on the mound. He'd come and he'd throw it at you, and you knew it was coming. He wasn't going to throw any break balls. I'm throwing the heat, and here it comes, here it goes. And where it goes, I don't care. I'm just going to give him the heat. And so, you know, there's just so many pitchers out there in today's game, especially. You know, they all throw so hard, but in today's game, they don't have the command like they used to have in the day, because, you know, the scouts and the analytics are saying the harder you throw, the better off you're going to be. But the problem is when you face big league hitters, you got to throw strikes. I don't care if what good does it do to throw a ball for 110 miles an hour? It does no good.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things with the wild today. I really think these pitchers today, especially the relievers coming in, they could do themselves a lot of justice. Just like throttle it down a little bit, guys. Throttle it down a little bit. Let's learn how to get the man to throw those pitches on the corner instead of just throwing it high heat and seeing what happens. But don't get me wrong, there's a lot of hard pitchers today. A lot of guys throw hard, but again, like you're talking about just a few minutes ago about getting surgery, you know, Otani has got it.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee, guys. There's no guarantee that surgery is going to work, especially the second time around. You just don't know if it's going to work. I play with a guy named Dan Opperman with the Dodgers,
yeah.
And he had three times he had the surgery done. Best stuff I've ever seen of any pitcher in my entire life, Dan Opperman. First-round pick for the Dodgers. Never got to the big leagues, but he just couldn't keep that elbow intact. And so I would back off throwing so hard and just work on learning how to be a pitcher. And that's one of the things that they don't do today in the wild thing era that's happening right now.
Right. As you get this thing winding down, let me throw two more quick ones at you. And wild things in their own way in today's group of guys. I don't know if he's doing push-ups on the mound, but I love Craig Kimbrell. I always liked him when he started out in Atlanta, then he went to San Diego, Boston. He's kind of made his trek around, over 300 saves. And then Josh Hader, who is the epitome of these guys like you were playing with, the Goose Gossages and just pure heat coming from that left side. Those two guys all match up with anybody today. And you can even throw the closer of the Pirates, David Bednar. I mean, a big guy out there at 37 saves. These three are my throwbacks to you as we're throwing cards down on the table here.
Well, you know what? I'm going to bring one from the old days, and he's a Hall of Famer today. Some people regard him as the best pitcher to ever live. Yeah, I think he's up there really well with it. He was fun to watch. Nolan Ryan, he was wild as
yeah.
gets. People don't realize, you know, he's all-time strikeout leader. But at the same time, I think he's got the most walks of anybody in the big leagues history also. And, you know, Nolan was that guy. He was like the Bo Jackson of baseball. You didn't want to miss anything while he was out there. Just Bo Jackson, same way. Every time he got an at-bat, George Brett said, there's no chance I was going to go to the bathroom during one of his at-bats because you might have just witnessed something that had never happened ever in the history of the game. And Nolan Ryan having seven no-hitters. By the way, every no-hitter he had a different catcher. So he had seven different catchers for those seven no-hitters. And so it just goes to show you that some of these guys have such good stuff. They call it stuff, you know, a lot of people call it different words. But when you have stuff like these guys have, if you can throw it over the plate, you just don't know how good you can actually be over time. And the one thing that Nolan Ryan really did that I really loved over his career, he bettered his mechanics year in and year out. And that's why he's actually got two careers. Nolan Ryan had two careers, beginning half of his career and the second half of his career. If you go look at the numbers, guys, they're totally different numbers. And he just improved. Next thing you know, he's pitching 46 years old, throwing 98 miles an hour for his last pitch when he tore his elbow up. So I love watching guys like that, whether he's the best pitcher that ever lived or not. They're just fun to watch. They really are.
Yeah. Well, we're down to a minute and 20 seconds, and I'll throw one at you. And seeing this guy warm up in some pins when they came to town and everything, I said to myself, obviously Gillette's not a sponsor of this guy. Enrique Romo looked like he never shaved, and, you know, who knows, he could have played an outlaw in some movies or something. But Enrique Romo gets my pick of the week here on what, you know, if he wasn't playing baseball, probably right up there with Kent DeColby. I don't know who yours is going to be in the last 45 seconds, but who is there anybody that would match those two guys?
Well, you know what? Every time you talk about the faces and how they do things, I just my mind automatically goes right over to Greg Maddux because you know little Earl Hershiser too because I play with Oral, and I know Greg. I played golf with him and against him up in Pebble. But when I think of what you're saying right now with how these guys are glasses and how they look off the field, it just makes you kind of wonder. But it also tells me one thing. Pitching isn't just about throwing the ball. You've got to have smarts. You've got to have intelligence.
Yeah.
And that's what these two guys had, Oral Hershiser and Greg Maddux. They knew, you know, they analyzed everything they did and how they pitched the guys. And that's why they were so successful. They just didn't have good stuff. they knew how to pitch with that good stuff. And so when you talk about the wild things, you see these guys on the mound, and then you see them off the mound. It's like, this guy could be a professor. And so,
exactly.
But that's the whole part about baseball, though. You just don't have one category of person. You got all kinds of categories of people. And that's when you put them all in the clubhouse and mesh together, and you win, just like the 90 Reds did.
Well, like we're winning every Tuesday, man. This show just keeps picking up steam. I'm so blessed to do it. Let everybody know how they can get a hold of you till we reconvene next Tuesday on Curves and Cheaters. Boy, I like how we match up these words.
Yeah, next week could be a whole lot of fun because I could get it. I'm going to get in deep with some cheaters out there for sure. First hand, by the way, so everybody be sure and tune in on that.
Yeah.
TipGross.com is a website, beagamer@gmail.com. And anything and everything, guys. And, yeah, this is getting more fun every week, and I can't wait till next week to drop some names and some franchises and teams I played with that cheated.
Yeah, and I can't wait to talk to you about next week when the Steelers play the Texans, your Raiders visit L.A. to play the Chargers. He's Kip Gross in Arizona. Yours truly, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles. We'll also get into the Major League Baseball playoffs next week as well. For Kip Gross, yours truly, Mark Mancini. Thanks for tuning in. Check out the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Stay tuned for the top of the hour where Peter Ray from Cleveland will talk with Bill North. Till then, have a blessed one. Thank you very much. I love you, Kip.
Love you too, guys. Everybody, see you next week. Let's have some fun.
He said it. There you go.